You're listening to Breakfast here on Radio Adelaide with me, Casey Tonkin, and it is the 13th of March. Unlucky for some, lucky for others. And joining me this morning to share a little something about this day in history is Breakfast producer Nick. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Casey. I don't think it's an unlucky day. It's not Friday.
No, but it's an unlucky number still. People don't like 13.
Oh, lots of people like 13. They're just, you know, the kinds of people who go for that sort of thing. If you tell them something's dangerous, they're going to like it that little bit more.
They're going to go for it anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what have you learned about today, Nick?
Well, on this day, 5 years ago, glory from the heavens, Cardinal Jorge Mario Bergoglio became Pope of the Catholic Church and took the name Francis after Saint Francis of Assisi.
Do you think he goes by Frank?
Frank?
Do you think you could just call him Frank? If you met the Pope, would you be like, Frank, how you going?
It
would have to be rather formal.
I'd call him Mario. If I was going to be really informal with the Pope, Jorge Mario. I'd be like, Jorge Mario. But yeah, that sounds like we're very close. But no, I probably wouldn't do that. This followed the departure of Benedict XVI, who was the first Pope to voluntarily step down from the role since Celestine in... Celestine V, actually, in 1294, so quite some time ago. So Francis is the first Jesuit Pope, which is the Society of Jesus, the first born in the Americas and the Southern Hemisphere, being from the Argentinian capital of Buenos Aires, where he worked at one point as a nightclub bouncer, of all things, before becoming a priest,
that's
obviously.
Cool.
And one of the first people from outside Europe, first popes from outside Europe since the Syrian Gregory III, who reigned in the 8th century.
Well, there sure is a lot of firsts and new things happening there, Nick. Mm-hmm. Has old Frank been popular because of all this excitement around him?
Well, it has led to a bit of a buzz that he's a new pope here to reinvigorate the Catholic Church, and probably not quite as dull and fusty as previous popes in recent memory. He's been well received by liberal Catholics because of how he's seemed to shift the churches from a stern, finger-waving adherence to a more focus on mercy and compassion, particularly for those on the margins of society. He's also improved interfaith relations after, of course, there was that low point when the last pope seemed to liken Islam to violence in a speech in 2006. Francis has done many things to repair that relationship and the church's relationship with other religions. He's been very vocal about the environment in his 2015 encyclical Laudato Si. It conveys his concern about consumerism and climate change and makes an urgent call for people around the world to take swift and unified global action.
Righteous.
Mm.
Have you found that much of his dogma still remains, despite some of the flashy words and you know, sticking with the current paradigm?
Yeah, he sounds very fresh, very papally hip with his, you know, don't hurt the trees and be nice to people.
Be nice to people is what the Pope should be telling people to do anyway.
Oh,
right?
You'd be very surprised, Casey.
It's a peace
I don't
thing.
Think we should go down that line this early in the morning.
It frustrates me so much.
Anyway, sometimes you've got to be cruel to be kind, or at least that was the message for
that
a long time.
Doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
And there was a lot of cruelty. But moving right along, we're talking about Francis today. While it's true he's allowed more room for the complexities of life, such as, you know, he's a bit up in the air on letting divorced and remarried Catholics receive communion, which in the old days would have been a very firm no.
It's just bread and wine.
Yeah, yeah. Eben to Seven Hill, you can see it, mate. Much of the church's doctrine has remained largely unchanged. Women are still barred from the priesthood, which former president of Ireland, Mary McAleese, described as misogynistic codology dressed up as theology, which is pretty, you know, pretty full on, and why women are leaving the church in droves. The church's handling of child abuse has also left much to be desired. So while Francis is popular and set a good example for many, he really hasn't sparked many major changes within church practices.
Well, if you follow the churches, then you might have some sort of belief that you'll live on eternally, and that might be how long it takes for them to change some of their ways. Hey, Nick, what else have you learned about today?
Yeah, I guess we'll spectate that from above. Anyway, today is, sadly, the anniversary of the UK's worst mass shooting in 1996, when 16, mostly 5-year-old children and their teacher were killed in a school in Scotland by a man using handguns who then killed himself. The man had been known to police and he was a legal firearm owner.
That's quite an awful story to bring us so early this morning, Nick.
Mm.
It's sadly familiar with what we hear a lot coming out of the US at the moment. What impact did this event have on the UK?
It is very similar, isn't it? Well, in the UK, it resulted in laws being changed very quickly after public advocacy and the Snowdrop campaign. The sale and possession of all handguns was banned in the UK, but not in Northern Ireland, who set their own firearms policy under the Good Friday Agreement. There is also a central database of all gun owners of any variety in the UK.
Much like what happened here in Port Arthur, and there hasn't been quite the same since, there comes a time where you do have to sort of say enough is enough.
Yeah, that was our Port Arthur massacre happened only a month later, and it was a very similar swift response from our government. But as for America, we'll just have to wait and see what happens there. Now, today is the planet of, I'm going to say Uranus. Was officially discovered in 1781 by British astrologer William Herschel. It's the third largest planet, with the fourth largest mass in our solar system, the seventh from the sun, and it gets to around minus 224 degrees, so it's not really the best, you know, winter vacation spot that I can think of. But he originally named it Georgium Sidus in honour of King George III, but renamed it Georgian Planet when it was pointed out to him that Sidus actually means star.
So he called it George Star, and then they're like, no, it's a planet, and so he just called it George Planet.
Yeah, it seems like an odd, because everyone thought it was a star before he officially discovered it was a planet. And then he went on to call it a star. So he's either messing with people or he's coming up with some great rock and roll names. George Star.
Well, yeah. How did it get its current name?
Well, as you can imagine, this name wasn't very popular outside Britain, where people weren't prostrating themselves before King George. His other astrologer mates proposed alternatives, like naming it after him, the Herschel. And someone actually said maybe we should call it Neptune after a famous British naval vessel, which was, of course, reused later. I don't know if that was the inspiration for the new Neptune, but anyway, we got a Neptune. But German astronomer Johann Bode proposed Uranus, a Latinized version of the Greek god of the sky, Uranos. This followed the ancient god mythology and the fact that while Saturn was the father of Jupiter, you know, not the planet, the god, Saturn was the father of Jupiter, the new planet should be named after the father of Saturn. So there was a nice kind of elegance to that. The newly discovered element uranium was named in honor of this decision to kind of support it. And it became the most widely used and finally official when the final holdout, Her Majesty's Nautical Almanac, switched over in 1850. So,
well, that's comprehensive, Nick. What have you got to wrap us up with? Have you got a song?
Names are very important when it comes to celestial orbs.
Yeah, that's
true. I do have a song to finish with, Casey. Well, actually, I've got about 12 songs.
Okay.
So we need to...
Maybe just one.
We need to whittle it down. Today's the 23rd anniversary of Radiohead's second album, The Bends. It's been called one of the greatest albums of all time, presumably by those who liked it.
Yep.
I've got a copy, and I have to say it's pretty good for its time, but it still sounds great. And a fun fact about Radiohead, they actually took their name from a much better band, Talking Heads song, but maybe we'll save that for another time.
That does sound like another time. So what of those 12 tracks, what'd you whittle it down to?
Well, I think we should listen to Fake Plastic Trees, the album's third single and first to be released in the US. And it's probably the easiest one to listen to in the morning.
You know, I really hate fake plastic, like trees and plants and things. It's one of my real.
Oh, then you'll love this song.
Love this song. Excellent. Thanks a lot, Nick. Let's have a listen to Fake Plastic Trees. You listen to Breakfast.
The green plastic watering can for a fake Chinese rug.